Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade or at least grab an extra latte after getting a Chime checking account with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, no minimum balance requirements, and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
Election College, Episode 33. If you think things were screwed up in 2000, check out the election of 1876.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
So, Ben, it's 1876, and things are going just great with the Grant administration, right?
Just peachy. There's no corruption. There's no ill will towards anyone at all. Everybody's just getting along great.
Yeah, and, I mean, really, the Republicans, I mean, it's kind of a sure thing that they're going to have big success and they will enjoy many years of White House living.
Well, the Republicans certainly are on their high horse right now. And anybody who wants to say otherwise, all the Republicans really have to do is say, hey, remember the Civil War? That was your fault. So they kind of just, get their way for a while, it seems, especially during the Grant administration.
Right. So keep in mind that in 1876, you could be president for as many stinking years as you wanted to. You could just run for election over and over and over again.
But as long as the people will have you, you're good to go.
Yeah. And I mean, it was a longstanding tradition that, hey, I want to be like George Washington. That is, I'm going to be like George and I'm only going to serve two terms and then go enjoy Mount Vernon or the Hermitage or someplace home.
Somewhere that sounds stately.
I need to name my home, Ben.
Okay. I think I've had that discussion with my wife before. Like, what would we name our home if we named it something? And we couldn't come to a conclusion. So we just didn't do that because we weren't from colonial times.
Yeah, I think I'm going to call my estate the Goffmore.
The Goffmore. All right. Well, Grant was actually, when his second term ended, he was only 54 years old, which the only other person who was anywhere near that was George Washington. He was 65 when the second term was ended. And so, like, a lot of people were like, Grant, buddy, general, you should run again because you could win, maybe.
Yeah, but it's just not cool to be vice president. So in the case of Grant's vice president, Henry Wilson, he dies.
Again. Oh, not that he dies again, but that another vice president dies. There's like, what is this, like seven now or something? Something crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. So Wilson dies and Grant is like, forget this. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and Grant was, I think that he had some people who told him he could have won. And I think from what I read, he was actually even on the ballot for, a portion of the convention until he was removed at one point and he decided not to run, And there's all these other guys who were in contention for the Republican National Convention nomination. The leader is this guy named James Bain. And he's like whipping it up every single ballot that goes through.
Yeah. And Blaine, he's from Maine.
So,
that sounds like a good campaign slogan. And he is the front runner. And on the first ballot, he's only 100 votes short of having a majority. And it's like, let's do this thing.
Yeah, why not? Let's go for the next one and get a few more votes even. Why not? And then the next one and the next one. And like, okay, if he's getting all these votes all these times, it just seems to me like, okay, well, they should vote for him, or they should make him the nominee. But all those silly rules make it so that they had to get all the way up to the seventh ballot.
Man, these conventions.
I know. This one's nothing compared to 1880. So hold on to your seats for that one.
Yeah. So the obvious winner after seven votes becomes Rutherford B. Hayes, who is from Ohio. And he's really kind of a cool guy. I mean, he's from Ohio. Which all people from Ohio are cool, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that would make me cool.
Yeah. Hey, you were born in Ohio.
Indeed I was. When the Civil War, he was an attorney at first. Then when the Civil War broke out, he left like a little political career he had going there, and he went and joined the Union Army. He was an officer. And dude, like, this guy is like a human meat shield. he just soaks up bullets, apparently. Hayes was wounded, and I guess it doesn't say bullets every time, but he was wounded five different times in battle. Seriously enough, I mean, probably got some nicks and scrapes other than that, but at least seriously enough to call it an official wound, according to the Army.
Yeah, so by the time the war is over, or just before the war is over, he is promoted to the position of a brigadier general, and he's kind of the big man on campus. Was he there at Appomattox? I can't remember.
I don't think so. No. I don't think he ever got quite to the point where he would doing negotiations at the end of the war, but that is a possibility. I could be wrong. But yeah, he was all the way up to that position. And then, after the war ends, he's so well esteemed that he actually gets elected to Congress in 1865. Of course, as a Republican, because that's what all the good people of this era were.
Exactly. So he's actually serving in the Ohio's second congressional district, which included Cincinnati, which is kind of near where I am. And he does this thing. He's a staunch opponent of Andrew Johnson and just about everything that he stands for. And then a few years later.
Like all good people were during that time.
Exactly. Exactly. I poor Johnson. I mean,
he tried.
Yeah.
Kind of.
So, he serves, in Washington, and he is a faithful opponent of Johnson's. And then he goes back to Ohio and becomes the governor.
Yeah. And he actually, strangely enough, he ran for governor, ran again for a second term and won. And then he does something else that we'll talk about here in a minute. And then after that goes back and becomes governor again. So kind of an interesting little journey he took there through.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he was only governor for that second stint. What? He was only governor for like a day or something like that. So it was really a short period of time.
I thought it was like a year, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, a year, a day.
Yeah, it's all the same in politics. So
exactly.
So the Democrats, you know, they're feeling pretty beat up by this point. Once again, I mentioned that pretty much if you're a Democrat, you're getting it rubbed in your face all the time that you were not necessarily, but almost positively on the losing side of the Civil War. So you're getting it rubbed in your face constantly. And so they're really looking for a good pick me up here.
Yeah. So who better to nominate for your president? Samuel Tilden. He was from New York. And the interesting thing about Tilden, so he's the governor of New York, and he was supportive of the war. And Ben, you don't really hear of people like this who were supportive of the war, but then very much against Lincoln. So,
right.
So that's kind of Tilden's claim to fame, that, hey, I'm from the North and I don't really care too much for Lincoln or his policies.
Well, and part of the reason we don't hear a lot of that, at least what I've realized, is we hear a lot about Lincoln's policies when it comes to anything surrounding the Civil War, because let's face it, that is his, let's say, claim to fame. That, and he got assassinated, which really isn't all that great of a claim to fame, but you know, it's still there.
Right.
So we hear a lot about Lincoln's policies regarding that, but we don't hear a lot about his other policies. I mean, I'm sure there was he had opinions on foreign policy and fiscal policy and all that other kind of stuff. And, you know, Tilden could have opposed him vehemently on all of those other things, but agreed with him, at least in a large part, on his stance on slavery and rights of black people and stuff like that. So you could really be a staunch opponent of Lincoln in almost every area except for one and still be known for that.
Yeah. And so Tilden actually was very popular in the Democratic Party, and they say that he was not even, or should I say, there was no Democrat that was more popular within his party since Andrew Jackson. So, I mean, we're talking Andy Jack caliber popularity.
Yeah. I mean, Andy Jack's on money, so that must mean he's pretty up there with Tilden, right?
Right.
I just thought of something else that I read earlier today about the whole Democrats being on the losing side thing. Somebody made the statement, I'm sure it was a Republican at the time, made the statement that not all Democrats were Confederates, but all Confederates were Democrats.
Ooh.
Man, that's gotta hurt. So anyway, moving on from that whole thing.
Yeah. So things go really smooth on the election, right? Because you've got no hanging chads or anything like that going on.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was totally clear cut. Absolutely. Except not at all. Well, one thing we, forgot to mention, the campaigning that went on during this election, was just some of the meanest campaigning that we've seen up to this point, and probably some of the worst it's been since then as well. So the funny thing though was, amongst all of these slanderous comments and everything going back and forth, it's still kind of considered unpresidential to campaign for yourself. So both Hayes and Tilden are just kind of just sitting back watching everyone be mean to each other in their name, and I'm sure egging them on at some points, but yes, let's just say the campaign was not a great one.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Democrats, like you said, you know, the Republicans are constantly bringing up the whole thing of, yeah, not all Democrats were rebels, but every rebel was a Democrat. The Democrats are like, come on.
Yeah, could we just drop it? All right, it's been 10 years.
Yeah, they called it waving the bloody shirt.
Yeah.
So get over it already, but if you're Republican, no. No right. way. So Willie Mays Hayes.
Willie Mays Hayes, yep. Mm-hmm.
No, old Rutherford B. Hayes.
I think I'd prefer Willie is to Rutherford. I don't know.
I kind of like that too. So yeah. Just in case our listeners don't know, Willie Mays Hayes was actually a fictitious baseball player in Major League. But anyway, Willie Mays Hayes. He's hanging out in Ohio and Tilden's hanging out in New York, and Colorado becomes a state.
Woo. And then they legalize marijuana.
Yeah.
But maybe that was a little bit later. I don't remember.
Well, sure. things got a little happy in Colorado because they were such a new state that the legislature actually selected the electors that year, because I mean, come on, they just became a state on August 1st. It's like people are partying like it's 1876. Yeah.
Well, it's just really humorous to me that the legislature is like, here's who our state's voting for. It was not at all democracy in that instance.
Right. Yeah. So, and if you're from Colorado, I'm sure you don't want to just be known as being the place where pot is legal. It's also called the Centennial State.
And that's true.
That's part of the reason. Yep. So, our friends in Florida, they were part of the controversy.
Okay. And so was Louisiana. The way to go, Louisiana.
Yeah. And of course, South Carolina, because South Carolina has some of the craziest elector, let's secede, history going on throughout history. But anyway, and in those three southern states, their results really favored Tilden, which makes sense, right? Because he's a Democrat and there's a lot of Democrats in the South at this point.
Right. But part of the issue was that there's a lot of fraud potentially happening.
No.
And a lot of threats of violence happening, a lot of shady practices to make the illiterate, which in the South, right after the Civil War, what do we have? We have a lot of freed slaves who are most likely, almost definitely illiterate. And of course, there are many others who are illiterate at this time as well, but they did a lot of things to subvert their votes as well. And there's just lots of shady stuff happening where no one's really sure exactly who everybody voted for.
Yeah. Cause I mean, Ben, of course, if you're going to vote Democrat, you're going to put Abraham Lincoln on the Democratic side.
Sure.
I mean, right? His image is pretty synonymous with Democrat, right?
Yeah, yeah. So just to clarify that, the Democratic ballots, a lot of them were reprinted with Abraham Lincoln on the Democratic side of the ballot. So to people who knew what Honest Abe looked like and knew he was associated with the Republican Party but could not read, they would just check that box. And, you know, that wasn't who they meant to vote for. They just didn't know.
Yeah, and you had all kinds of crazy certifications being signed. This really does have some throwback to the 2000 election. You remember that?
Absolutely. Talk about voter fraud and disenfranchised voters and everything. You have the almost the exact same thing happening in multiple instances.
Yeah. So, over in Oregon, they had a single elector, that was under dispute, and, the state was clearly in favor of Hayes, but they had a Democrat as the governor, and the Democratic governor was like, oh, nope. That vote belongs to Tilden. Of course.
Yeah. Right. Sorry. Once again, the government is going to decide for you what's happening.
So what you have here is it's just chaos. And whereas in 2000, I think it was just basically it came down to Florida and what was it? Several hundred votes, maybe a couple of thousand votes that were under dispute.
Right.
here you had that situation going on in several states, and the results showed that Tilden won the electoral vote.
Right. So, wow. Okay. So I guess, I mean, everybody's heard of President Tilden, right?
Yeah, of course.
Huh. Weird. So Jason, I feel like we're missing something. We've got the majority of votes going to Tilden. Got the majority of electors going towards Tilden.
Uh-huh.
And then, no, sorry. It looks like these certificates that are signed by the governor and attested by the Secretary of State's, they're going to swing to Hayes.
Yeah, of course.
Sure. And so Hayes ends up having the majority of one in the Electoral College. And so, of course, I mean, when it's that close, you can't, even if you know it's not true, you can't help but cry fraud, right?
Right.
I mean, you've got to imagine there's some somewhere. So why not cry fraud and hope it works?
Right.
And so then just everybody across the country just seems to explode with this idea of fraud. And it turns bad. People who are not in favor of Hayes start threatening him. They shot at him.
Yeah, they actually, a shot was fired at, I don't want to call him Willie Mays Hayes, but at Rutherford B. Hayes's home in Columbus, Ohio. And his supporters were rallying to his home, calling for the president. And Hayes was like, it's impossible to really know what the results are. So leave me alone.
Just chill. Yeah. And it's funny because at that time, President Grant, who's in Washington, far away from Hayes at the moment, is like, okay, so I could see this getting out of hand, and I've done the whole war thing. I don't want to do that again. Can we get some extra military here around Washington to make sure that people don't riot against me and want me to make a different decision? So that's what they did. They kind of brought in more military just to strengthen Washington from getting pummeled.
Yeah, that makes sense. So meanwhile, you've got, I mean, this is just a constitutional crisis. I mean, what in the world do we do? Well, get Congress involved, right?
That's always the surefire way to solve your problems, Congress.
Yeah, and get new laws to be passed. And so in late January of 1877, they formed a 15-member electoral commission to settle the results of the election. So what they did is they got 5 members who were selected from each House of Congress, and then they were joined by 5 members of the Supreme Court, and they all got together and formed a compromise. There's a lot that could be said about all of the compromising.
Yeah. We could probably draw this all out extensively. All you need to know is there is a commission of 15 people, and some crazy stuff happens where people get mixed around, and it ends up being off kilter, I guess you could say. So they end up like kind of coming to this little compromise thing. The Compromise of 1877 is what we call it now. I'm sure at the time they didn't call it anything like that.
Yeah, they're probably like, well, the Democrats are going to get screwed anyway, so let's try to get what we can out of the deal.
Yeah.
So basically, they called for the compromise called for the removal of all U.S. military forces from the former Confederate states. And there was going to be an appointment of at least one Southern Democrat to Hayes's cabinet, which, if you're going to do that, have it be the Postmaster General. So they got a guy named David Key. He was from Tennessee. They're like, hey, Davey, you're a Democrat. You're from the South. Run the post office.
Yeah, why not?
And then they agreed that there would be another transcontinental railroad that used the Texas and Pacific in the South. So, a little public-private partnership going on there.
Right.
And then there was also legislation that would help industrialize the South and really get them back up to, I was going to say get them back on their feet, but really, help try to form some sort of economy in the South, because I mean, you can imagine just how wrecked the economy was still in the South at the time.
Right, right. Yeah, and so basically everything gets pushed through, and there's nothing ever written down officially. This isn't an actual compromise. No one's saying we should make this law or anything. It just turns out that, okay, we're gonna go this way, and then return Hayes is gonna do this for us. So they adjourn on March 2nd, and then on March 4th, Hayes gets inaugurated, and what do you know? Nobody riots or kills him or anything.
It's crazy. And Tilden, you know, I guess he's a pretty good sport about the whole thing. He said that, and this is a quote, he said, "I can retire to public life with the consciousness that I shall receive from posterity the credit of having been elected to the highest position in the gift of the people without any of the cares and responsibilities of the office."
So basically, I know I won, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because have you ever heard of Samuel J. Tilden?
Not until today.
He was almost the president.
I know. It's so crazy. Just a few votes narrowly split, and we could have had a different history completely. A couple of those people that didn't get stuck in their driveways from the snow, if they had got out to vote, we would have had a different president.
Yep.
Man.
You're a hanging chad away from the presidency.
So, crazy enough, this is the end, essentially, of Reconstruction. We'll talk about that as we go along and move into the next election. And remember, Hayes said, "I'm only going to serve one term." So we'll see if he keeps that promise or not in our next episode.
I can hardly stand it. I'm so excited for the next episode.
You look really, I thought you were looking really antsy. I couldn't tell what it was from.
Just the jitteries, you know, I mean, I'm also excited that Colorado is a state now.
That's true. Yeah. Good friends of ours. All right. Well, I think that's everything we have to say. Don't forget to go and support the show by doing all of your Amazon shopping through the link electioncollege.com/Amazon. It'll take you right to Amazon. Anything you buy will help us out, and it won't cost you a penny more.
And I'm sure some of you have some more things to say about the election of 1876. So, go ahead, head over to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're there. Our handle on all of our social media is Election College. Go figure.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's our name or something.
And of course, Ben.
Uh-huh.
It takes what? What did we say?
It takes two.
It takes two to make a thing go right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
But so it only takes one to make it out of sight on iTunes. So head over to iTunes. It really does only take about 30 seconds or 45 seconds, depending on how fast you can click on the star rating. And if you have a little bit more time than that, go ahead, give us a review. We'd love to hear that, or see it in this case. And it really does help get this podcast into the ears and hearts of more awesome people just like you.
I think that's everything. I guess I'll say bye, Jason.
Yeah. We'll see you later.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off
my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.